Podcasting 2.0 for April 9th, 2021, episode 32. Oh, yeah, we got lightning in a bottle, baby. Don't worry, all will become apparent. Friday, once again, time for a board meeting of Podcasting 2.0, podcastindex.org. It's well past lunchtime for once. I'm Adam Curry here in Austin, Texas, and in Alabama, the czar of rebalancing channels, Dave Jones, everybody.
That is not me. That is not me. You're the channel guy.
I couldn't think of anything that fast. I just needed some C. I tried to do alliteration. I failed horribly on this.
Yeah, I'm not. You don't want me rebalancing your channels.
You know, that could be a good pickup line, though. Baby, do you need your channels rebalanced? Because I could come over and show you how to do that.
Yeah, that's. I don't think that's going to get you very far. You're going to get the drink in the face.
I am feeling another jingle coming on, though.
Oh, yeah.
companion to our hot namespace talk.
Hot channel talk.
So this is a very special show. We're used to having guests in the boardroom. Sometimes they're just assessors. Sometimes they are full-fledged board members. We'd like to have them hang out. Usually it's via remote connection, but today, for the first time, and also for the first time in the actual studio, which I think is the first time I've had someone in the studio doing a show for real, we welcome the major domo of the Lightning Network, Ryan Gentry.
Hey, guys. Big fan of your work.
No. Love your work. Big fan. Love your work.
Sorry. Yeah. Big fan. Love your work. Especially, I think my favorite was the last one.
That was the best one. Oh, my God. That was really, really good. Mm-hmm. Ryan, it's so good to have you here, man. Nice to have you at the board meeting.
Absolutely. I'm really happy to be here. I mean, huge, huge fan of what you guys are doing with Lightning Technology. I think it's fascinating. I'm really excited. It's been great kind of jolt of energy the last 6 months or so that you guys have been working on this.
And it's kind of interesting because I don't know if you know how much, well, you must, how much of a role you've played in what's been going on with our connection into Lightning. So first, maybe just for people who don't know who you are, you, work at Lightning Labs. Mm-hmm. Are you the SVP of business development?
I'm just the business development lead is the title. We have a lot of leads on the team, infrastructure lead.
Assistant to the regional manager.
There you go.
That's exactly right. That's me.
Do you have to do TPS reports and shit?
Huh? Do not have to do TPS reports. I get to come here instead. How great is this job?
Well, so that's really what I want to point out is that you have been, wherever I turn as we started this adventure, I bump into you, which is a really good thing because you are really... I say major domo, and I mean that somehow you are the one that communicates with everybody, and you could not have a better business development person in this place where we're all at right now. I mean, you're really kicking ass because you hooked us up with everybody.
That's the job. I mean, like it's easy to do, right? Because I'm just when I got started, kind of in my Bitcoin adventure, kind of before I really got into Bitcoin, what I was obsessed with and what I studied at my master's degree was like telecommunications and trying to find like what's going to be the next big network, right? Like, you know, we had, you know, the internet itself, then we had social networks. What's next? What's going to be the next big network? And I have full conviction it's going to be the Lightning Network. And so just being a part of growing this thing and seeing it get bigger and bigger, seeing it get traction, have people find uses for it. Like I would do this stuff even if I wasn't getting paid. So it's just, it's fun to be able to connect people working on things. It's fun to figure out what certain people are doing, what's working, what's not working, spread the word. It's a really easy job. I really enjoy it.
Yeah. I think Dave and I feel the same way, except we actually aren't getting paid, which is kind of interesting.
Well, but that's the problem I'm solving for you, right?
If you wanted to know what that feels like, right? I can let you know. Yeah. It's funny. Like there's sort of three people that always like jazz me up about Bitcoin and Lightning stuff. And are like, you're like the first base coach, you know, like just fire, you know, just getting you fired up. And it's you, Paul Etoy and Jack Maulers. It's like, I can listen to any one of you guys and just get the fire back under me. If I've all of a sudden, you know, it's like, everything's dwindling. I'm like, oh God, this is annoying.
That's high praise, man. That's rarefied air I'm breathing. I really appreciate that.
No, I'm serious. You three guys just know how to bring the fire.
So what's really important for people listening to this is to know how you brought some really good pieces together. So 9 months ago now, I think it was when Dave and I had this idea and we started to implement it. Mm-hmm. And then somewhere last week of August, we did this first show and we started getting the index going. And our mind was always a namespace, and there's going to be a value block in there, and we're going to do streaming payments through Keysend on the Lightning Network, which is what, and you've now seen it, the Curry Cash, mm-hmm. Raspi Blitz sitting mm-hmm. there. That's what I learned how to do everything on. And so it was, so I sent an email to info@sphinx.chat, which Paul picked up and he replied. And so we got connected and that started to go very fast. Mm-hmm. And then did Paul put me in contact with you? It must have been that way because you're on their board, right? Yeah. I think, yeah.
I'm not on their board, but I'm...
You're not on their board? You should be.
I mean, yeah. Paul, if you're listening.
Hey, Paul, we all want to be on your board. What the hell is that? Just give me some stock. Who gives a shit? Give me some sats, baby.
Yeah, give me some sats. I'll do it for sats.
Okay, so... And then you hooked me up with a number of people, including Roy from Breeze.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's... That connection, I just want everyone to understand, that was huge because here we are... Really, no more than 5 months after that connection, and we have another app released. Yep. You know, App Store, iOS, Android, working.
Yep,
working front to back all the way through.
I mean, and again, my part of that was very small, and not really all that hard. It's really easy when you have a great team like Breeze and a great entrepreneur like Roy. That I can give him like, hey, I think this is interesting. You should talk to this guy. And he can just go do his due diligence.
Blowing a horn for you.
He can do his diligence and then just run with it. Yeah. Right. And now they're live and it's working and it's beautiful. And then I knew that they would just do a great job with it and knock it out of the park. And I'm thrilled to see that it's really working for him.
Yeah. Well, it's not just working for him.
That's right.
I mean, how many podcasts do we have using the value block, Dave? Now, what have we, what's our conversion ratio?
Like 71.
Wow, really?
This is going fast.
Wow, I didn't realize it was that many.
And it's been such an interesting ride to see this meld between wallet developers and mm-hmm. podcast developers mm-hmm. Because it's so separate. And they I appreciate Roy so much, who contacted me after launch and said, boy, I really apologize. I know nothing about podcasting. I apologize, man. I didn't set you up. I should have warned you about a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So where do you think the growth is going to come from besides just more podcasters? Do you think that more wallet developers will see an opportunity here?
It's a really good question. I certainly think that there's tons of room to run with podcasters. I definitely think wallet developers being able to just get, being able to skim just a little bit off the top of financial transactions is like, one of the oldest businesses in the book.
Right. It's what the business is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It is the business.
It is the business.
Yeah. And so if you can get to where you're sitting right on top of the money, right? You're right on top of the value flow. You own the user and you're, part of the connection to them and the value that they're mm-hmm. paying for. It's very easy to be able to start skimming just a few sats into your pockets every transaction, right? I think that's...
And when you say skim, I mean openly and transparently.
Absolutely, not nefarious at all. Just that, you're providing value. Like, you deserve to be paid a little bit for all the hard work you're doing. So I think it makes too much sense.
And all those guys,
absolutely. And then it flows to the ecosystem, right? I think the guy, not everybody's going to want to run a node. There's this constant tension... And on the Lightning Labs side, which is, we are both building the protocol, which the protocol needs to be trustless and needs to be decentralized, needs to be built for the sovereign individual. Like, it's very important for the protocol to be able to spread to, billions of devices all over the planet that it is totally neutral.
While you're doing the corporate pitch,
I know.
I'd like to understand a little bit more about the history, because I really honestly don't know. Sure. Jack Dorsey has a huge... a good token with me for what he's done, mm-hmm. but I believe that he had foresight and said, okay, this company needs to be there, and whether he created it, funded, I don't really know what the connection is there. I'd like to know that. I'd just like to know where it came from, because if anyone's a detractor of what we're doing, mm-hmm. and these are people I ignore no matter what, mm-hmm. like, well, who owns it really? Okay, I can see the protocol, but tell me about Lightning itself, where the Lightning Labs came from, and the whole genesis of it, because that's a little fuzzy to me.
That's a great question. And honestly, I'm probably not going to do it justice because I joined, you know, relatively late. But this goes all the way back to, you know, 2013, 2014, right?
Mm-hmm.
And really, it goes all the way back to, you know, like Hal Finney on Bitcoin Talk forums in the early days. You know, it's very obvious to anybody with any sort of network experience that the Bitcoin network is not going to scale, right? You got one block every 10 minutes. That block can only be 1 megabyte, right? That's 13 kilobits per second of throughput. That's, you know, four times, or 25% of the old AOL, dial-up modems, right?
Mm-hmm.
64K, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not very good, right? We're going to need another way.
We live that life, Ryan Gentry. Who do you think you are, young man?
So people for a very long time, and the Bitcoin community, people much smarter, and much, much more talented than me, we're trying to figure out what's the right way to scale this network, right? How can we get it to where billions of people can use this on a daily basis while maintaining its properties? So there's tons of great research that went into it, a lot of really great ideas, a lot of people that kind of pioneered the idea of, you know, using payment channels. So like Balaji Srinivasan, his company 21.co, I think, earn.com is what it turned into.
1ML?
No. 21.co was the company name.
Yes, yeah.
So it was like, you know, you would get paid in these little, you know, micro transactions for doing work, mm-hmm. which is, you know, not dissimilar to what we're seeing from a routing node, but it was with like a little Bitcoin miner in the device. And that just, it didn't work, right? So they had to pivot and sell to Coinbase and all this sort of stuff. But like people were thinking about these ideas very early on, but it wasn't until the Lightning Network white paper got written, which by guy named Joseph Poon and a guy named Taj Draja. Taj is mm-hmm. at MIT, the Digital Currency Institute. Joseph Poon, I think, is on a beach in Thailand somewhere.
Were these old crypto guys? Like the old...
Not Joseph was kind of a younger guy. Uh-huh. I don't know him very well.
Okay.
Taj is a researcher. I don't know. He's older than me, but he's a really talented researcher at MIT. So they released the white paper. Elizabeth Stark, the Lightning Labs co-founder.
Where'd she come from?
Because she edited the white. She was a part of developing the white paper and publishing it.
Because we'd love to have more women down in the trenches with absolutely. Us on the developer side.
She's a you know, a warrior. She's in the trenches fighting, slugging this out for.
She needs
you know,
to send some lieutenants and stuff down our way.
Yeah,
some foot soldiers.
I hear you.
Yeah, that's one thing I've brought up with Adam before is that the Lightning Labs. Just the Lightning Labs staff. If you go to your about page or whatever it is,
it's like Benetton commercial, baby.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's like the most diverse group of people I've ever seen. I mean, it's amazing that, you know, we talked about that early on. Adam was like, podcasting doesn't have a diversity problem.
Yeah.
Bitcoin doesn't have a diversity problem. I mean, just look around. I mean, everybody's already doing it.
Yep. That's 100% of that credit. Well, I don't know about 100. Vast amount of that credit goes to Elizabeth, and I'm sure she'll be thrilled to hear that it was noticed.
Not just noticed, admired.
It's
inspirational.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
And so when I say we like some developers, you know, we'd love to see more female developers, just for the energy too, man. Different insight, that'd be really absolutely. Good.
Straight up. Preaching to the choir.
We got lots of female testers, by the way. Mm-hmm. This is a very good thing.
That is a very,
very good thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
So the white paper got released. People were very excited about it. And, you know, Elizabeth and Lalu goes by, our CTO goes by Roast Beef. That's his
oh, that's Roast Beef. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, connection.
Yeah,
okay, connection. Got it. Oh, interesting.
They teamed up and said, you know, like the only way that this network is really going to get built
mm-hmm.
Is if we raise the money and go and build it. So, you know, I think...
And they had no prior company experience?
Elizabeth, was a former professor of law, copyright law in particular, uh-huh. At Yale and Stanford.
Huh.
Lalu at the time was, I don't know, he's like 21 maybe. I think just coming out of a master's degree at UC Santa Barbara.
Uh-huh.
I mean...
So they went together and they raised the money together?
They raised the money from David Sachs, I think, was involved in the seed, and maybe Jack Dorsey was in the seed as uh-huh. well. I don't know. This is all public information, so you can fact check me after the fact. But, you know, I do, you know, you've said, I think, multiple times that that Jack is like, you know, the mastermind behind all of it.
I'm wrong. Here to prove wrong. Me wrong. Fact check false.
Mm-hmm. He is a seed investor and he's an investor in Lightning Labs for sure. But this is very much, you know, kind of Bitcoin community coming up with the protocol idea. Elizabeth and Lalu running with it, raising the money and then going out and building the team. And there you go.
Thank you for correcting us on that. No, that's good. Yeah. That's good to know. Okay.
So then they went out.
So it's really them, the two of them. They had, holy moly. Yeah. I have a whole new perception of everything. Yeah. I'm glad we straightened that out.
And so, you know, and then it took, like, you know, the thing that's tough about Bitcoin is, you know, a large part of the value prop of Bitcoin is that the rules don't change, mm-hmm. right? There's 21 million coins, blocks are every 10 mm-hmm. minutes. Everybody's dealing with the same rules. You know, they may not be fair or anything, but it's quality of opportunity, right? So it's
interesting that a copyright lawyer co-authored the white paper of the Lightning Network. That's very interesting.
It is pretty interesting, isn't it? She brings like a really unique perspective to just about everything.
Because this is the thing that people don't understand. This is where podcasters fall mm-hmm. down. This is where mm-hmm. I think our developers, and it's not because, you know, they're not up to speed. They've been focused on other yep. things, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For me, it was right off the bat, understanding that in a decentralized network, when you want to get paid, you have to send an invoice. Already, that by itself is counterintuitive mm-hmm. to Venmo, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. which of course, what Jack Mahler's went to solve, I think, very successfully.
Yep.
You know, so that once you get past that, then the idea of channels and liquidity is. I mean, it took me months to really, I mean, I saw it, I knew what had to be done, but I didn't get it until, okay, now it's finally all fall into place. And what I always say to people is, freedom takes effort. I have no other answer.
Well, and also the other part of it that is really hard for people to understand is a lot of people come and look at this technology from the top down, right? Saying like, I want this thing to work like the thing I'm used to in the past, mm-hmm. like Venmo, mm-hmm. right? But the way this technology mm-hmm. was built was from the bottom up, right? This is working within the constraints of the Bitcoin protocol. And like, you know, everybody wishes the Bitcoin protocol had like different knobs and widgets and things that we could twist. But, you know, like this is a thing that belongs to everybody.
That is what it is.
And you have to build from the ground up. We're building like a brand new system, right? This is like, you know, the telecom people in the 80s were probably like, well, I wish the internet could do this because mm-hmm. TCP/IP is shitty and blah, 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 blah.
Novell network is exactly. the way to go.
Yeah. It's like, well, but no, like we got to work within these constraints and I'm sorry, it's going to take a little bit longer and it's going to be counterintuitive, but like the people that are really going to get this and are going to run with it, right? They're in like seventh grade right now.
Let me ask you about something along those lines about just kind of like misunderstanding fundamental. Like mm-hmm. I saw somebody on the Mastodon posted today, I think it was Christopher Ising, posted a Twitter thread where Eric Wall had a bet mm-hmm. with you. Mm-hmm. Okay. Can you just explain? I missed this, so I can't wait.
I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah.
The guy who posted it was like clearly like a Lightning hater. And
I wouldn't say he's a Lightning hater. Eric's,
no, not him. The guy that posted the screenshots of the thread.
Okay.
And I was trying to figure out trying to follow along with this thread. And it seemed like it was just different versions of the same argument I've heard about Lightning, mm-hmm. which basically to me seems to always boil down to a misunderstanding of liquidity.
Yes. I think you're exactly right. So for background, I think midsummer of last year, before I'd started at Lightning Labs, probably I would not have engaged in this public activity if I was already employed by Lightning Labs when I did it. but you know, ETH was running against Bitcoin in a big way. You know, there was like tons of people talking about how ETH layer twos were right around the corner and they were going to blow the Lightning Network out of the water, blah, 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 blah. And I was just, you know, wanted to call Eric in particular, and Eric's a nice guy. Like we're friends.
What does he do? I don't know.
He used to work for the Human Rights Foundation. And now he works for a fund. I think he's either in Sweden or Norway. He's Scandinavian. So he works for a fund up there that, you know, it's kind of a weird kind of European conglomerate where they do invest in a lot of Lightning stuff. So like, he's very familiar with the tech. He's not a hater, but he is also kind of like, intellectually more curious about the Ethereum, ecosystem.
Right. Well, that is kind of Yeah, I mean, it's Aggies versus yes, Longhorns.
It is. I made this comparison on the Marty Bent podcast and got it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, that's probably where I picked it up from. Yeah, yeah, that's totally what it is.
Yeah, it's very true. I mean, you know, yeah, Auburn versus Alabama. Right? Yeah, it's the same story over and over.
Except,
and over,
you know, we all know Longhorns are better. Obviously, so it doesn't matter what your fight is.
So I challenged. I was like, you know, I won. I don't think that Ethereum is going to continue running against Bitcoin. Like, this is just a momentary blip.
I'm sorry, I take it back. Ethereum is not equatable to Bitcoin ever.
Ever.
1,000%. Yeah, not possible. I just wanted to make sure people know my maxi status.
Absolutely. So, okay. Thank you for that. You all will.
You're throwing your creds
at it. That was a point of personal privilege. Sorry.
You don't need to turn in your card. I'm glad you said that. Yeah. This is a test.
Yeah.
This is
all a test. Gotcha.
I wanted to be, kind of short ETH BTC, and I wanted to short the expectations of these new layer twos that we're going to launch, because as you see, like, this is really hard technology. Like, it's not that the Lightning developers like don't know what they're doing. It's that this is really hard, right? Protocol development is it's like an academic exercise, right? You got to think of all the ways in which this can fail, and not only like people using it wrong, but like, you know, what happens if this bit gets flipped because, you know, the network connection is spotty, or like, you know, gamma radiation comes down and hits the, you know, server in the wrong way or something like that.
Or a bunch of Yahoos come along and start doing 15,000 transactions a month into channels not prepared.
Exactly right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Y'all had that in your initial plan, right?
100%.
Invite douchebags from podcasting to fill up our channels.
Yeah. That's literally a unit test in their code.
So there were just all these inflated expectations. So I bet Eric, or I said, you know, I bet by, you know, March of next year, the kind of total value locked in these ETH layer twos will not be more than, 10x that of the Lightning Network. And I want to be clear, and I tweeted kind of clarification.
Say it again. I want to understand the bet.
So the ETH layer twos, right? Like, the total public capacity of the Lightning Network right now is like $60 million. And at the time it was something like, I don't know, 10 million or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so saying that the total value in public network capacity of the ETH layer twos was not going to be more than 10x what was in Lightning.
What is the ETH layer two?
There's a bunch of them.
Oh, there are.
And it's okay. We shouldn't dignify them with on-air discussion.
You work for Lightning Labs.
I know, right? But they're very
you're not the cowboy anymore, huh?
I know. Like, you know, I won the bet, which I'm happy with.
Clearly,
right? Yes. I was right. Yeah. So I made $1,000 off of him, and he paid me over Lightning, which was good, and we can get around to the difficulties with that.
Who had the capacity?
Yeah, that's what I wanted to talk about, was the difficult, because that seemed to be the whole circus, was the how do you get paid? And it felt a little played up to me. I'll be honest.
It was. But before we get into that, I want to make the point that like this was very much a bet that was just like shorting overinflated expectations of these people who were overly exuberant. Total value locked of the Lightning Network is like a meaningless metric. It's not important. It's not indicative of everything, because as you guys well know, right, private channels are all over the place. Tons of people have private channels, and that capacity doesn't show up.
In this metric. Correct.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah, it's like GDP. It's a meaningless number.
Damn. Dave actually has quite a financial exposure. Go. Be careful. Right. He knows what he's talking about. Yeah.
All right.
It's very good one, Dave. So, he's got me on that.
So it's not important. And the most important reason why is like the whole point of Lightning, as you guys know, is recycling capital. Like, you want to keep the capital in channels and you want to send it back and forth as much as possible. You want like as high a velocity as possible so you can make those fees. Right. So you don't want to put a bunch of capital onto the network that's not doing anything. Mm-hmm. Right. That's the exact opposite. You want to put all of these coins into places where they're being used all the time. So capital efficiency is like really the driving goal here. And capital efficiency is like exactly opposite total value locked. So like, just to be clear, listeners, if anybody comes up to you and says, oh, the total value locked to Lightning like hasn't grown, like, you can just point at them and know like that person doesn't know what they're talking about. But
private channels and all that. I know of at least $50,000 in private channels, just me, just from mucking around.
And then that's, it's everywhere, right? So it's a stupid metric, and it was kind of a stupid bet, but I won and I made $1,000. So like, whatever.
So
back to Dave's question. Yes. Which is, what was actually the argument about? So the argument was, Eric lost the bet. and in kind of a very Eric way of settling the bet, he decided to, you know, find all of the sats that he had in Lightning wallets on, you know, old phones that hadn't been touched or synced in like a year on old unsupported wallets and try to send me those sats. Right. So these are nodes that hadn't been synced to the graph in like a year and a half. Right. You know, like they were old channels. They're like literally the Eclair wallet is like no longer like really supported by async. They moved over to the Phoenix wallet.
Phoenix wallet. Yeah.
Yeah. And like the Bitcoin Lightning wallet, like, you know, Anton has moved on to a new project and like hasn't supported. So those are like the first two that he started with. So he's like tweeting about how he's having all these problems. Like, well, yeah, dude, like, of course you're having problems. Like, you haven't used these in 2 years. And like, this is cutting edge technology. It's moved very quickly. Like, of course it's not working.
I pulled my Pixel 2 out of my bedside table drawer.
Pixel 2, it's like I pulled up my
Lightning. Dave understands this type of support, too. Yeah, he understands these issues.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, it's more like I got my PlayStation 2 out and like my VR game isn't working. Yeah. What the hell,
right? With that, man.
So, you know, like, I think, so he had all of, he tweeted out all these problems and was very, you know, theatrical, played it up, all that sort of stuff.
So you jumped into action as a good corporate man, right on, way to go.
And so, but what I think what's important, though, is eventually he did get all the funds over to a new Breeze Lightning wallet, and he was able to send me in one shot $1,000 on the Lightning Network from a non-custodial Breeze node to my personal routing node.
Which is like, what, and what was the fee?
I mean, it was, I don't actually, I could look it up. Let me see.
And by the way, while Ryan is looking that up, all of you listening to us on PodStation, Sphinx, or Breeze, crank up those value sliders. Give us max sats per minute boost a little bit, will ya? You cheapskates.
Absolutely.
Hey, Dave, I was telling you, Ryan and I had lunch earlier, but we didn't talk about anything really, which was quite difficult. So here's what I've noticed as I've been looking at the, because, you know, I have my own node and the index node I've been looking at. So when it comes to per minute Satoshis, I guesstimate, because I don't have any, I mean, I have the data, but I, you know, only have portions of it. I guesstimate that on Breeze, most people are averaging 50 sats per minute, somewhere between 50 sats or 100 sats on minute streaming, but the boosts are per minute. But the boosts are very low. Not a lot of boosts coming from Breeze.
Oh, okay.
On the other hand, on Sphinx, we pretty much only see the standard 5 sats per minute, which is the default, which is hidden away in preferences. Contrarily, the boosts outweigh almost the Breeze payments because people can interact and show boosts to each other. And, you know, like, oh, here's my numerology boost, or here's my big baller boost, or any of that. And so that gamifies that part of the process inside the tribe. So if somehow we could get Sphinx to put the value slider on the outside and get Breeze to figure out how to show all users, including the Sphinx users, what boosts are coming.
The psychology of this is so fascinating.
That's you know, the value for value. We learned that numerology is such a big deal, and I think it's almost a problem on Breeze that you can't. It's a you know, step by step. You can't enter your own custom amount. It's a rounded number.
Yeah,
which is an interface choice, but therefore people don't use it because you can't send your little code. You know, like, oh, here's 69, 69. Yep. I've learned all this in 14 years. I just wanted to say that it's phenomenal to see these types of things which have never been able to research in podcasting before. Yeah. Listener behavior. We have download behavior of phones. That's it. Phones. Yeah. We don't know shit about listeners. You're advertising to phones, people.
Well, that all started, I mean, that started with No Agenda way a long time ago. Y'all pioneered 14 that
years ago.
Of trying to figure, like, because when y'all opened up donations and opened up the value for value payment, then you had immediately people starting to send you numerology and, you know, custom things. And that became their way of expressing themselves with, you know, financially. It's like sending a message.
What I realized,
like, there's so much power in that.
What I realized after watching Max and Stacy talk about it, that we've a lot, because of the open nature and Justin Rusnecki?
Rizvani,
we had lunch with. He coined the term play wall.
so good.
And like, holy shit. Holy shit. Like Playwall. Like, Playwall.com already taken, by the way. not being honest. So Playwall. And the minute you enable that, and this is, it's hard to, I mean, there has been no price discovery on creative content since Apple unbundled the album and made tracks 99 cents. And app, it's the same thing, by the way. Mm-hmm. You put together a song track, you put together an app, just as much love, passion, work goes into it. It can be lots of, you know, you understand the parameters. But that was not price discovery. That was price fixing. And it's hurt. Mm-hmm. It's hurt. The music business has been destroyed. And it's created a mindset of which I think is not accepted, by the way, by mm-hmm. By this generation.
Not right? One bit.
Yeah, you know, and hopefully you see that the same way I do. Mm-hmm. It's like, this is not a price discovery. This is a fucking ripoff. And you take how much? Mm-hmm. So the minute you say, by the way, this value for value thing is how much you think it's worth, it's 10x, mm-hmm. if easy. Not 100x. It's just scary because we're not educated that way.
Yep.
Well, so, now they're trying, like the players within podcasting, the big players like Spotify, now they're just exploring just different versions of the same price locking mechanism. Yeah. But as before, 99, you know, $2.99, $4.99, $7.99, like that stuff, it's just a rehash of the same thing of divorcing of the sense of value, the subjective value of the listener from the actual, you know, content, what they think it's worth. They literally can't pay you more. They are prohibited from paying you more money, you know, unless they just drop a check in the mail, literally, you know? Yep. So it's like that whole idea, bringing the value for value thing, it brings the price, brings the value in line with the price in the subjective mind of the consumer. I mean, there's nothing philosophy. Else that I know that
does great stuff. Like, yeah. Exactly right.
Nothing else does that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. Mm-hmm.
Value is projected. That's like the number one question I get from especially the finance bros about Bitcoin. It's like, well, but what's the intrinsic value of a Bitcoin? And it's like, well, I reject the premise of the question. All value is subjective. What else you got?
And by the way, that question is very invaluable. It says zero value to me. That question, just go away.
But so I reject the premise of your question.
Who are these bros who you talk about? You know,
oh, man, I was in a fraternity. My world is filled with them.
UT?
Yeah.
You were,
yeah.
What fraternity?
Delta Tau Delta. Same as Matthew McConaughey and Governor Abbott. They were both Delta UT.
Okay.
Fun story about Matthew McConaughey. His we had the same house mother, like the live-in lady who,
like, you know, the RA.
Yeah, but like you had to have like a live-in house mother for like insurance purposes and deal with the fire department and all that sort of stuff.
How misogynistic.
Well, you know, it's fraternity. So apparently Matthew McConaughey's freshman year, he's from, you know, Longview, which is East Texas. Mm-hmm. Apparently his freshman year, for the whole first semester while he was pledging, he convinced the entire fraternity and all of his friends that he was from Australia and was a foreign exchange student. Spoke with an Australian accent.
I bet he could do that.
And then he came back in the spring and was like, idiots, I'm from Longview. I'm
nice. Yeah.
He seems like a nice guy. I've never encountered him.
I never have either.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Adam.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, what was the fee? What was the fee on your winnings?
Oh, yeah. So Zap doesn't pull up the fee, unfortunately. Sorry. Yeah, that was but I'll look it up when I get back to like the actual, the command line. I mean, I bet it was, you know, 50 bips or something like that.
And it went from Breeze wallet to your Voltage node?
Not to my Voltage node, to I run too many nodes. This is my routing node, the one with like all the inbound, because like, you know, this payment had to succeed. Right. So
this is interesting. Now, do you have this, like, is it like a work thing? You have a huge routing node?
It's not a work thing. It's more just like, I mean, it kind of is a work thing because I want the experience of wanting to run.
Just like me, you're using your own node to fix shit.
Yes. Okay. Fix shit and learn how it all works the upgrades and feeling, you know, the pain points that everybody else is feeling. Right. But this is like, you know, like a significant amount of money on it.
So that kind of begs the question. Mm-hmm. What is the Lightning Lab's goal? What is their mission in life?
Bring Bitcoin to the next billion people.
Okay. And how do they expect to make a living doing that?
So our right now, like our products that we offer, right, is liquidity services. So as you well know, channel management and liquidity management is just a bear. It's hard. It's really tough. So we've been kind of laser focused on that for the last couple of years with first the Loop product and second the Pool product. But it's really important to like put an asterisk on that and say that the only way that those, like this was a purposeful decision from Lalu and from Elizabeth to pick this business model, because the only way we make money by managing liquidity for nodes is if there's billions of nodes out there. So like our incentives are directly aligned with growing the network. So like growing the network has to happen first, and then we will backfill the growth of the network with these problems that we expect that all the node operators are going to have. And largely that's played out. I think like the one way that it maybe has kind of shifted a little bit that hasn't aligned with our expectations is there's been a lot, like problems have been so bad that a lot of people have gone more with a custodial node vision. And if you're, you know, running a custodial node, you don't really need to use Loop or Pool. You just like throw more money at the problem. And that's okay.
So we kind of broke that open then, because we're kind of dependent upon fully noded or at least key send enabled, which is almost the same thing.
Yep. And so that's fantastic. Right.
You're welcome.
Which is, thank you. Yeah. That's one of the reasons why I was so excited about this, because like in our vision,
we tricked one of them. Look, this is a fucking VJ. He thinks this key says thing will work.
But so, you know, like it's again, it's like you said, it's the only business model, right? Mm-hmm. Like we think that there's eventually going to be billions of dollars a day, you know, which, you know, in our terms is billions of sats per day, transacted on the Lightning Network. And we just want to get, you know, 50 bips or 25 bips of all that traffic. And we think the best way to do that is to provide these really easy to use APIs for managing your liquidity. And I think there will be more that comes down the road.
So you mean like Pool? That's like an Loop example. Okay. Yeah. So, and you and I know this because we've talked about this. So it's not really easy yet. You know, the thing is, I mean, it's just not easy. And I would love to be able to, what I would love to be able to do is when someone fires up a node, you know, because they're a podcaster typically, and they want to receive, and they'll be receiving quite a bit, and you know, and they have, you know, they have people they want to share with, so they need multiple nodes. You know, like a podcaster would set up at a hosting company, and I'm just saying podcaster as a bookmark for musician, author. I mean, it's all coming. Yeah. Is exactly that point. It's just, it should be known. Like, here's my cost for the node. It's, you know, which is simple to kind of figure out, but then the actual, not just the liquidity, but the quality of liquidity is going to be very, very key for so many reasons that I'm not just discovering as we start to see real, because you know, we have real flow, Ryan. We're going to be 40,000 transactions this month that we're seeing. It's crazy.
I hear you. Yeah. And this is, I mean, we are, trust me, we are keenly, keenly aware of this. And it is, I think the general Lightning Labs MO, like if you'd been around using Loop, like a full year and a half ago, like we like to ship very early, get these products into people's hands when they're still ugly and have warts in them and don't really work, and like iterate with the market, right? Which is why I think so many people run LND versus the other protocols, is because, you know, we really respond to the market and build in accordance with our users and with our customers, right?
Well, thank you, because I think that the virtual nodes has come out of some of the demand that was created through podcasting at Sphinx.
Absolutely.
That came. Yeah, it's 100%, really good.
Right. Yeah. And so that's, it's, you know, it's something that it's kind of uncomfortable in the moment, knowing that you've put something out that, you know, is a little janky and doesn't really solve all your customers' problems and stuff, Dave, like that.
What does that sound like?
I knew that was coming. Yeah. No, that's we share that same philosophy, Ron. We ship things that are ugly as sin, and then we fix them later in panic mode.
Yep. And so it's one of those things.
Ship and panic. Ship and panic. That's what we do.
Episode title, damn it. Yeah. Ship and panic.
So, you know, like we launched the Pool marketplace for channels in November. Right. So it's coming up on 4 months out. We launched like the UI for it, I think, just in either December I think it was in January. So that's only been a couple months. Like we're iterating on it. We've got like a lot of ideas on how to improve it. We're getting a lot of really good feedback from people on what works and what doesn't. And I think the goal, though, of course, like the vision for this is, you know, how with Breeze, right? If you're looking to receive money and you don't have enough inbound liquidity, if you don't, you can't receive enough, mm-hmm. they will just on the fly open a channel to you.
Mm-hmm.
Like the goal is that there are 1,000 nodes like Breeze, right? And they're all, they all have the same capabilities. They all are like roughly equivalent in terms of, you know, their, the services they can provide. We're able to kind of score them and make sure that, you know, their incentives are aligned to try and,
is that the boss score? Is that the basis of it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that, you know, you can know that, you know, they have some skin in the game regarding either this score or maybe down the road, like they actually have to like lock up some Bitcoin and put it at risk in case they go offline.
I find it disappointing, or from our perspective, that is based, it appears based on, as a big factor, amount of liquidity.
Yeah.
Whereas we're dealing in such micro payments that, but we are doing a lot of activity,
mm-hmm.
Yet don't qualify for the boss score for certain other types of financial yeah. incentives that we could mm-hmm. participate in and make use of.
Well, so
oh it's racist, quite frankly.
Well, so yeah. one of the things I'm really
is there like a mini boss score?
Well, so I think like again, this is one of those things that's going to be continually evolving for sure, and it's something that we're working on because it's such yeah. an integral point. However, one of the things I think is really interesting is kind of the next addition to Pool is the concept of sidecar channels. So right now,
sidecar channels.
Mm-hmm, okay. It sounds sexy, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
So right now,
sexy sidecar talk.
So right now, Pool is just, you know, buyer to seller. I want to buy a channel. I'm a podcaster. Right. I'm receiving like all sorts of flow. I'm getting tons of people are listening and I need to like increase my inbound liquidity. I want to buy a channel from somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Right now I have to buy direct from the source. I have to like run Pool myself. I have to have a Pool account. I have to be able to fund all mm-hmm. that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. Right. It's,
you got to do command line, Ryan.
There's
Let's
overhead.
Get down to that part.
No, you can, there's a UI for it now.
Oh,
you can do it on the UI.
And Graham, where's my UI?
Yeah. This next concept is sidecar channels is allowing it to where Voltage could manage Pool for you.
You could just ping
Graham and say, hey, Graham, buy me a channel.
Right.
I'll pay you sats over Lightning and you buy me a channel from somebody in Pool.
So philosophical question. Do you think that this should be abstracted to a layer that no one ever really knows what channel means? Or do you think that for the overall understanding of freedom and forward movement of life as an active participant in a new global financial system, it is, and I ask this for a specific reason, it is important to understand how this works. And do you think that it's important to expose that to users? Because the biggest pushback I get is, you know, it's my mom can't do it,
mm-hmm.
which I say, you know, what's wrong with your mom? Learning disability, because it's very rude to moms, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Think better of your mom. She's a smart lady.
But on the other hand, I also don't want to create a world of people who think that a browser is the internet, or that Google is the internet, or DuckDuckGo. Hey, I've got privacy on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
This is... I think it's important, but I don't know what the philosophy is. I don't even know if there is a right answer to it.
I don't really know if there's a right answer either, because I think on the one hand, I very much sympathize with you on wanting everybody to be an expert and understanding the nuts and bolts and like being a truly self-sovereign citizen, right? Like I agree with you.
At my core.
Of course. Mm-hmm. I want that to happen. But on the other side, we have tons of lessons throughout the history of technology that's the attitude that got nobody to use PGP, right? But you know what got a bunch of people to use end-to-end encryption? Is Signal. Because Signal is just really easy to use,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think that there's a really delicate balancing act there, and there's a problem with trying to prematurely optimize for UX and like sacrificing some of these core properties. It's really more of a timing issue as the technology develops.
Okay. Right?
I 100% agree with that, because we... Like that's one of the things that we are struggling with right now. You know, we have podcasterwallet.com that mm-hmm. we're to get mm-hmm. bring people on board, mm-hmm. and there's this threshold where you try to get things more and more simple, but then you hit a realism point
mm-hmm.
where it's like, okay, we can spend a monumental amount of effort to get an extra 5% ease of use here,
mm-hmm.
but once you get that, then what you end up with is that you've onboarded a user who doesn't understand what they've just done.
Yep.
And that opens up a new set of support problems.
Which is unbelievably complicated. Those secondaries, when they do weird shit. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's as much, like Dave, you're exactly right. It's as much about self-protection as it is the ideology.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. We have people that are putting, you go into Podcaster Wallet, and we ask for your podcast feed URL and the email address that's listed as the owner inside. Mm-hmm. And I, on a daily, you know, on a regular basis, I see people putting in an email address and
Anchor.
And yes, exactly. Anchor.fm or podcastindex.org. They really have no idea what they're doing. Yeah.
But yeah. Dave, as we pulled together now almost 2 million podcasts in the index, what have we found people put in the damn feeds?
Oh, every kind of craziness people with, you can imagine.
or 12,000 replicas of the same feed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or one feed with 12,000 episodes.
Yeah, people do weird stuff.
Or a PDF, of 24 megabyte PDF instead of an image.
Yeah. I mean, or a Photoshop file is there.
Yeah. I mean, but that's killing, you know, it's just killing someone on the bandwidth, and it's just crazy.
So I know. Stuff. So there's a really difficult balancing act with that. And I think it's also important, like you look at, again, like we go back to what I was saying, I don't know, 30 minutes ago or something, like the Lightning Network was born out of the constraints of the Bitcoin protocol, right? Yeah. Bitcoin protocol is like largely fixed, but there are still tweaks that we can make to it. And so like, you know, we don't have to get into details here, but like, you know, there's a big change coming hopefully this year with Taproot, right? And so that enables like a bunch of, it makes Lightning way better. It makes Lightning way more private. It makes Lightning way more scalable. It allows for like really cool, more programmable things to be done.
Is that going to, because I only know, you know, I've heard a little bit about it.
Mm-hmm.
The adoption, is there a time where we're going to do phase one, test, see if everyone likes it, then adopt it? I'm not quite familiar with how this process works.
There is not a process, which is one of the reasons why it takes so long. Sure. But it's also, you know, this is decentralization, keeps it safe, right?
Yeah, sure.
But so like, you know, one of the problems with wanting to like abstract all of this difficulty away from the user and stuff is like, one, there's not really like a ton of people clamoring for this technology right now, like in the billions, right? Where we need to make this so simple that your grandma can use it. So like we have time where we can still try and focus on making it safe and decentralized and educating people and all that sort of stuff. But also too is the Bitcoin protocol and like therefore Lightning itself is going to change. And we are going to like, we don't want to prematurely optimize for Lightning today because we may miss that, you know, in a couple years, all of a sudden Lightning will get really much easier and maybe you can be totally safe and not run your own node. Right. And like, you know, like if you're curious, the thing to look into would be a concept called channel factories, which is where, you know, 10 nodes are sharing a single really big UTXO and are making channels within channels and stuff like that. And so like that was actually
That's where Kim Jong-un drops the EMP.
So that was actually, I think, I don't want to misquote this, but I know that like Lalu helped, Roast Beef helped with that paper that was like, oh wait, like wait, you guys already launched the Lightning Network? Like, you should have built it this way instead. And so that's, you know, when that happens, like, it could be 2 years from now, it could be 10 years from now. Like, when that happens, I think that really helps improve the UX of the Lightning Network in, like, a really big way. But it's going to take time.
That's the one thing I was thinking about earlier is when it comes to, like, channel management and that kind of thing, some people maybe listening to this, especially podcasters, maybe listening to this, listening to you talk about buying a channel and loop and pool and all these things and being, and your first thought is, well, I mean, oh my gosh, I mean, I don't make, you know, that doesn't seem like it would apply to podcasters. That seems like it's more of like on a higher financial level. Mm-hmm. But really, I mean, if you think, and it may be for a very, very small podcast, but I mean, take something like New York Times, like The Daily or Serial. I mean, now you're talking, I mean, they made $42 million in revenue last year.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're talking about, you know, that is where this channel management becomes of extreme importance.
Absolutely.
Because there are big podcasts out there that command, you know, seven figures that are going to need, they're going to have to face these challenges.
100%.
So there is a podcaster tie into it.
Yep, 100%. And one for, and I know like I get pushback from, you know, people in the Lightning community every once in a while for using kind of these obscure terms. So let me.
You're safe here. It's a safe space.
Let me break down. I really like this metaphor for loop though, because I think this is really easy to understand and something that everybody has experience with. All that loop really is, and especially in the podcast context where you're receiving money, all loop really is taking the cash that you have in your cash register and putting it in the bank, mm-hmm. right? But you had, you know, everybody who ran a store for forever had to do that at the end of the day, right? Where they, you know, got a certain amount of cash in the cash register and had to take it to the bank before the bank closed. Luckily in Bitcoin, the bank never closes. But your cash register is just your channel, right? So you're receiving sats. People are paying you. And eventually your cash register gets full mm-hmm. and you need to go deposit in the bank. So you just loop it out. You just swap it into on-chain Bitcoin. And it's really that easy. It's not like we do have some kind of obscure language that we've tried to use to get particularly to try to educate developers about the mental model to use when they're building around this. But like really it's still money. It's, mm-hmm. it's no real different from the way that we've always interacted with it. So all loop is just emptying your cash register. That's all there is to it.
I think my mom could understand that, Ron.
That's not bad, isn't it?
No, that's
your mom good. Has no learning disabilities.
That's true.
So, two things. One, the state of, my analogy for the state of where we're at right mm-hmm. now, because it's the one I have and it's so close. I wanted to say pirate radio in a way. But it's all because I'm an amateur ham radio operator mm-hmm. and it's kind of like, you're working on HF, you know, you're relying on kind of atmospheric conditions.
Real quick, have you seen the guys that sent the Bitcoin transaction over
here? Do you know that I was one of them?
Oh, shit.
That I was the first one. Did you know?
Plot twist.
Now, to be fair, it was just an invoice, so it wasn't like a full-on, it was just an invoice that I got offline, but I did get it.
Was it from NVK, from the CoinKite
yeah.
guy?
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's okay.
Okay.
But that was here.
I thought that was awesome.
That was here in Austin. So cool. Was that with that little radio right over there?
Amazing.
With that KX2. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's like your signal's reaching the other end, and it's kind of atmospheric because mm-hmm. there's some skip and some things, and I'm bouncing, mm-hmm. I'm arriving. But what we're moving towards is VHF, where we have repeaters all over Austin. You know, mm-hmm. I'm a repeater up here in, the, mm-hmm. in my house, mm-hmm. and you know, and everyone pitches in their particular piece to make their repeater work. And yep. now we don't have a financial model, but boy, wouldn't that be interesting for
and
that?
We will.
Yeah. Well, precisely. Well, this is much, much more exciting. I mean, forget about ham radio is dead. I'm sorry to say it mm-hmm. because when Snowvid hit, I'm on all the channels and everyone's like, can you hear me? How's my mic check? I'm like, where's all the, hams are going to save the world. Like, no, that was dumb.
Sorry.
Very disappointed. Yeah, very disappointed ham community. But it's that combination with pirate radio where we're still, you know, like I'm balancing on the roof. I'm looking at Tim over at LMP. Mm-hmm. Can you get my signal? Mm-hmm. All right. You got anything, you know, got something from Breeze.
Yep.
And that to me is one of the most exciting times of my life.
I hear you, man.
It's one of the fucking, and I was, you know, 17 when I was on rooftops and doing mm-hmm. transmitters and, you know, mm-hmm. 150 watts meant a lot, which is just the liquidity of the day.
Yep.
That was our
yep.
liquidity to send our, mm-hmm. send our energy out to the, mm-hmm. to the people. Mm-hmm. Except now, you know, now people have to invest in a radio and, you know, it's a little mm-hmm. different. It's not mm-hmm. so ubiquitous yet, mm-hmm. but it's coming.
It's coming.
So what we need is we need a services company. And if there's the ones you, because I think in general it's called a lightning service provider, but mm-hmm. even though several companies call themselves that, what we really need is a way to connect these two worlds where I can say to, you know, to Martin and to Mitch and to David Norman, I can say, here's the API mm-hmm. that somehow does it all. And I know that's simplistic because yeah. of the nature of key send and being fully noted. Mm-hmm. Because no one has made that their business. Everyone yep. has said, here's my open source code. Go ahead and yep. do whatever you want with it. I would love for someone to be, because you know, that's where the magic is going to happen. So companies mm-hmm. like us, and we're just, mm-hmm. you know, big word, we're a partnership really. Mm-hmm. We're doing one core thing now. We're aggregating. We're aggregating yep. all the data yep. and we just want to get whatever you think is worth it, but we're happy with 1% for our piece in the chain. So there has to be some companies that can do that who don't have the self-interest of their own wallet, etc.
Yep.
Is anyone doing that?
Well, so I think the closest, I mean, like you're talking, you're working with two of them already. They're just very early on, right? It's LMP.
Yeah, but they have no time for doing any of this because they're running their own stuff, of course.
I know. I mean, it's the thing is,
LMP, by the way, you're right, comes very close.
And Tim's fantastic, right? I've chatted with Tim about Lightning, and he's been like on the edge, pushing the boundaries.
You know that these guys like Tim and Graham, they don't actually sleep.
I'm aware of that.
They don't sleep ever. Yeah.
They've been struck by lightning. They don't need to sleep.
Struck by lightning.
Touche.
It's pretty good.
Well,
right?
You know, the other one that comes close, and it's not necessarily API-ish, but Satoshi's.stream. That
I am blown away by this.
Yeah, I am too. Yeah. That thing came out of nowhere, and those guys are killing.
You know, I think it's a bunch of Dutch guys,
yeah. Uh-huh.
and they've been like routing between themselves, mm-hmm. and it was probably Marnix who drove that. And once they got going, man, it was just, it was nonstop. I will pay money to have this on my node.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. Yeah.
So that's what I think is interesting. Like a more meta point just about kind of decentralized communities and open source protocols is like, I've seen this happen kind of over and over again where there's this gap in the market, right? And the people that are trying to build stuff, they're like, I need somebody here filling this role. Like, mm-hmm. this has to happen. I need this to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And there's always this period that's really uncomfortable where like nobody steps up. Mm-hmm. But eventually, like somebody, some entrepreneur somewhere says, you know what? Like, I can solve that problem.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And they step up and they fill the gap. And all of a sudden, like things just kind of accelerate. But there's always that uncomfortable period where just like nobody stepped up yet. And everybody starts wondering, like, is this going to work? Do we need to, like, go reach out to the big enterprises and, you know,
well, LNP did that for us, for mm-hmm. sure.
Exactly.
Tim stepped in exactly the right moment.
Those guys are doing the same thing with Satoshi's.stream.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, this is...
And thank you, by the way, for running support for us. Uh-huh. I see you at 6:30 in the morning. Do you also run the Lightning Pool Twitter account?
I do not know. That's one of the Dutch guys. That's HBL.
Man, that smelled like you.
No, that was all him. Again, like this is.
No, but thank you. It's appreciated. You know, and to see the CEO of Breeze doing it, you know, it's beautiful.
It's a labor of love.
Paul is always doing support.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's
one of the things that on that note, kind of a similar thing that's been really sort of striking me lately.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about this yesterday. Is we kind of went, if you go back to the origins of open source, I mean, maybe not all the way back to the cobweb days, but I mean, mm-hmm. like if you go back to, you know, the 90s and Linux getting started and mm-hmm. all these sort of the birth of FOSS
mm-hmm.
and, you know, at that
shareware.
Time,
remember shareware?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, if you go back to that whole, if you call that maybe a phase one,
mm-hmm.
Where people were just literally giving stuff away, they got nothing in return for it.
Yep.
And it was, you know, that's where you ended up with these sort of these problems of, of these projects that became critical to the internet. And if they fell over, mm-hmm. you know, the whole internet stopped working, you know,
yep.
But then you had then you went to sort of a phase two. Where you had companies like Red Hat who was saying, okay, we're going to give away all of our stuff, but we're also going to, we're going to charge you more of like a freemium thing where if you want support for it,
mm-hmm.
then you're going to buy, then you pay us and that's going to be our business model.
Yep.
And, but then now I see sort of like this phase three emerging with Lightning Labs, Breeze, LNPay. I mean, Sphinx, where you got these, and I would put us in that category as well. We have a new category of open source company where it's like where the model is, yes, we're still going to give our software away, we're going to be radically transparent, we're going to give everything we have away, but we're just going to our value is going to be as a participant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The thing is, and like what they're building, what Lightning Labs is building, what we're building, what Breeze is building, that open source stuff is building things that will last way beyond if that company were to disappear.
100%. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, one way that I don't want to cut you off at all, so please continue, all I wanted to interject with is we're just another node on the network, right? Well, another couple nodes on the network, right? And when we're experiencing all the same problems that everybody else is, a lot of the stuff that makes it into L&D, a lot of the work that gets prioritized is problems that, you know, we ourselves are having and that we notice and we're like, oh man, other people are going to have this problem too. And then a lot of the other problems are things that, you know, like Breeze in particular is a great example where they've been pushing the ball forward on the ZeroConf channels and all that sort of stuff. But they say, hey, like, you know, I know you guys are uncomfortable with, you know, this sort of stuff making it into L&D, but we need this. We're going to make the PR. We're going to make it easy to review. We're going to set it out there and we're going to push for this to make it in because we think it'll improve the network for everybody else.
Do you think that ever will be a company like, well, let me just give you a guess, like Apple, who could integrate this into their products, or is that counterintuitive to their current business? And
actually, I think Apple is probably the most likely. Now, you know, probably years away, but like Apple made a very interesting...
Why years away? Just because of the nature of the beast? It takes six days to move something out of Suez Canal idea?
So kind of kind of like in 2017, so I really like how... And this, a lot of this comes from Elizabeth, of course, working behind the scenes. But how Ross Stevens, the executive chairman of NYDIG, I don't know if y'all read his shareholder letter talking about Bitcoin, but no, this is actually his interview with Michael Saylor, the MicroStrategy CEO. He talked about how there's Bitcoin the asset, and people really get Bitcoin the asset, the store of value. But what people are sleeping on and what they don't really understand yet is Bitcoin the network. And that's, of course,
it's a communications network. Right? It
exactly.
truly is.
100%. Yeah. That's exactly right. Yeah. But like, not a lot of people get that yet. In 2017, there were, you know, all of this over-exuberance, all this talk about how, like, oh, the institutions are coming. Like, you know, they're going to be buying, you know, billions of dollars of Bitcoin, putting on their balance sheet. We're like, next step is nation states. We're almost there. And all
it's
of
like
that.
Desktop. This is the year of desktop Linux.
100%, right? But they weren't wrong.
No, the mobile Linux. That's what this is. Okay, and thousands of sealed indictments will be unveiled, my friend. Right. All these crooked people are going to jail.
But like, they weren't wrong. They were just like 4 years too early, right? I think that was because, you know, these large companies, these large institutions, when they make a big decision on something core is like joining a new network, right?
It's a big deal.
It's a big deal. They don't like, could Apple put a node in every phone today? Like, yeah, probably. Like, are they going to wait until, you know, somebody else has tried and failed and looks stupid doing it so they can learn from it? Most likely, right? And I think we'll probably get there. You know, we'll backdoor our way into it. You know, the future, I think, is everybody, like, you know, your little Raspberry Blitz right there, which is a great product, and Rudzol and OpenNOMS and those guys have done a great job with it. I think the future is something that's, you know, like a slick, super sexy Apple or Square device.
You plug
it's,
in.
It's your bank. You plug it in and you pair on your phone and it, you know, nobody's able to lose your money. You have customer support, you know, you got like private key management, super easy, and it just holds your Bitcoin and you like slowly earn interest. And, you know, ideally, if you're a podcaster or a creator, and this is why I think Apple's actually a great fit for it, is because they're all about, you know, creative people. If you're a creator, this is your... You know, your bank, your cash register.
And that's why they did what they did with Final Cut Pro. About creators.
Yeah, you know, like seriously. there's this kind of two-faced side to it, right?
Yeah. I was the strongest proponent of Apple.
I know. Don't you think
Tesla changed that narrative when they pulled their Bitcoin purchase? I mean, because it seems like that was... I think it was a little bit of a two-edged sword because some people can dismiss Tesla because, hey, Elon's crazy. But then at the same time, though, that's a humongous bet.
That's a really good point.
You know, and Apple is, you know, if Apple is multiple Teslas, you know, I guess it comes to this point where we are financially or economically on a macro level. If you look at it, I mean, just take the U.S., for example. I mean, there's really no place to put your money to make anything.
Yep.
And that is trickled. It began with low interest rates at banks and that has trickled up now to large. It's the problem is growing to larger institutions. And the way the U.S. treats Bitcoin is, you know, treating it as property is almost, it's probably the best thing that could have ever happened to Bitcoin, honestly.
Yeah, 100%.
Thank you for saying that,
Dave. I don't know these people personally, but I know people that know, like, you know, a bunch of the big Chinese miners who've been mining since 2010, like the flood of Bitcoin that has come out of Chinese pockets and into the hands of U.S. institutions over the last, like, 3 years in particular is just staggering.
You were telling me this morning about what Abbott was saying. This is old news by now. People are hearing this, but so the idea is that we're going to make Texas a crypto state, mining friendly.
I mean, there's like the Bitcoin is as Texan as it gets.
I agree. And have you ever been out to those guys out there at the switch there beyond Taylor?
The Rockdale site?
Yeah, those guys.
I haven't been out there yet.
Oh, my God.
I want to go bad.
It's like crypto cowboys in the desert. It is.
Yeah.
They have a barn, literally.
I know.
A barn.
Yeah, that's incredible. And, I mean, you're going to see, like, there's like, those guys, there's the flared gas guys.
Yeah, the flared gas is very interesting, where they build little containers out there. So
there's the HODL Ranch guys. But then there's also, the Unchained Capital guys here in Austin. Like, they're one of the kind of foremost kind of Bitcoin banks, right?
And it makes sense with this would happen in the South, too. I mean, you saw Kentucky.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Kentucky just passed laws to make, to incentivize Bitcoin miners to come to the state.
So Abbott's tweet this morning, he was pulling a Trump and tweeting from the shitter. 12:37 a.m.
Nothing wrong with that, my friend.
Count me in as a crypto law proposal supporter. Is increasingly being used for transactions and is beginning to go mainstream as an investment. Fidelity, et cetera, trying to get a Bitcoin ETF. Texas should lead on this like we did with a gold depository.
That's so powerful.
Just send it into my veins.
That's so powerful.
Let's go. Yeah. And so one like interesting little connection here is Wyoming is kind of leading the way right now, thanks to Caitlin Long and a number of folks up there and now Senator Loomis up there. Leading the way on like actual legislation that's been passed, that's Bitcoin friendly, that's regulating the asset the right way, that's making it safe to build a business there.
And to hold crypto assets within the state.
Absolutely.
That's important.
And so
that's great.
The really cool thing that we have going here in Texas is one of like the key members on the blockchain task force up there that got this pushed is Will Cole, who is the head of product at Unchained Capital now.
Have I met Will? Did I meet him when we did that meetup? I can't remember. I met 18 guys named Parker. I remember that.
I know. I don't know
where you are in Texas.
He's almost always there, but I actually don't know if he was that specific one. I don't think he was. Okay. Because, yeah, he's, got him. We got Christopher Calicott at Trammell Venture Partners, who's helping kind of with the blockchain task force here in Texas. Joe Kelly is the CEO.
Hey, how can I help? Is there anything I can do here? Do you need any like free marketing?
I mean, as I generally do, I'll connect you to the people that can help.
Yeah. What am I even saying?
You'll get the handoff.
Yeah, exactly. Because I mean, that's one of the things that, a lot of the crypto anarchist people in Bitcoin, right? Like they say, like, we need to build this system so that we don't need regulators, right? So that they can exist outside of the state.
Yeah, that's not the right way to do it.
I largely agree philosophically again, but like you just gotta
transition.
Like, I know you gotta transition and like it would be so much easier if we could do this in a way where like the rules were set in place to where like it was okay to do this and people felt comfortable.
It would be great. And what a way for our mayor in Austin to rebuild a bridge and to reach out and to say, we may disagree on some things, but I like the idea of Austin being the crypto capital of the United States.
Put a billboard up in Cabo. Let them know.
Yeah. So this feels like to me.
But Ted can put it up. You see, this is the beauty of it. Okay. Ted can put it up so Adler can see it.
There we go.
It feels like to me, I love the fact that states are doing this and leading this charge.
Oh, yeah. States' rights is going to be huge.
It feels like the return of wildcat banking.
That's a great point.
Yep. And it's all because it's property and not currency. If this was currency, you would have immediate. Well, even so, I mean, like to me, I think one thing people don't understand, at least here in the U.S., is that states' rights is probably the strongest right now. That it has been since before World War One. I mean, it is so, and it has been a very slow, sort of silent progression that began with it began with California and the West Coast challenging the feds on marijuana legalization, and that thing just died. I mean, like the feds initially were raiding California, and they basically said, "Hey, you're gonna stop that right now
because we might have our National Guard like shoot back."
Exactly. They did. And it has been like a resurgence of states right now. States are essentially nullifying. And not maybe not in principle, but in action, mm-hmm. they're nullifying federal laws just whenever they want to.
Yep.
And if you have a return, like a resurgence of sort of a wildcat banking alternative currency
yep.
movement that happens among the states, that could get very interesting very quickly.
What can we learn from that history and mistakes that should not be remade? Or is our genie so like when our genie got out of the bottle, the bottle ceased to exist?
So I think the really interesting thing, there was an argument posed by Ben Hunt, who writes, he's got like a financial blog that I'm blanking on, of course,
right now. Mike's brother?
No.
It's a bad joke. I'm sorry. It's a really bad joke.
Epsilon Theory is his blog. So he's a hedge fund guy, finance mm-hmm. guy. Generally very smart, and a lot of Bitcoiners have been reading him for a long time, and he like has they've been just flabbergasted that he like doesn't like Bitcoin. So he recently was like on a, you know, it was on a podcast or Clubhouse or something like that, and kind of clarified his position a little bit, which I actually thought was very smart. And he's like the way that this goes down, that it fails, he's always been to like fudding about Wall Street kind of taking control and stuff. He's like, the way this goes down and goes sideways is if we get Facebooked. Just like kind of how Facebook did to the internet, where they just made the experience so nice and so slick that before you knew it, billions of people thought that they were using the free and open internet.
That's what I'm worried about with Apple, silo. That they come in and do some kind of payment thing and mm-hmm. Apple Pay, and then they make it so slick and so easy that everyone goes drooling over there until we go through another 8 years and people get kicked off and yep. defunded and deplatformed and they have to learn again. That's a fear.
So that's the argument. Yeah. That's the argument for prioritizing education right now rather than prioritizing, UX is saying like, you know, we need as many people out there in the world that understand this stuff, that are capable of running their own nodes, that are capable of running nodes for their neighbors and for their friends and stuff like that, that they can make the experience easy enough for their community so that when Apple comes in or, you know, whoever comes in with their like nice, sleek, shiny, you know, almost Bitcoin, but not really Bitcoin, they can say, no thanks, like we're good with our own thing.
There's one maybe weird piece of advice, wisdom I'll give to anyone who wants to start some development. From our own experience, we started 9 months ago. I put, you know, some savings onto my home node here, put a couple grand in Cuckbucks onto the podcast index node, and Dave pulled his card for the servers, and then we brought in Eric, who, you know, made us all legal and appropriate and protected mm-hmm. and bank accounts and all that stuff. But even though I've been spending money on Voltage, I've been opening channels for people, we've set up nodes for people and mm-hmm. pre-finance it just mm-hmm. you know, because we thought it was important, we still have more money than when we started with because of the because the value of a Bitcoin versus the US dollar has just exponentially gone up, that we're running in the plus while making expenses of a startup, which is a very novel experience.
It's a superpower.
Yeah. And I don't think it'll stop. You know, I'm like, I'm with Max Kaiser. No matter what, whatever Max says, he called 50 right, called 62 right. I'm with Max.
Yep.
It doesn't really matter. The fact that the money would not be stored in any better place.
Yep.
Is a huge advantage.
That's a good point, because there's been an ongoing discussion over the last couple of days on the Mastodon about like with me, and I know Adam is the same way, and a lot of other Bitcoin centric people are this way. Is, you know, I just leave when money comes into my node, like my value split of this show, you know, sat stream in, and I just leave. I mean, it just stays there. I don't ever think about taking it out, because I'm just gonna do that. But then there's been questions lately. It's like, well, okay, now I've got sats. Like, what do I do with this stuff? Like, how do I get it out? You know, like, how do I getting it out? Meaning, how do I convert this back into fiat if I'm gonna, and like, what's the current thinking on that? What's the best way to sort of convert stuff back out of Lightning without getting sort of destroyed on the way out?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, like, that's...
Isn't that what Jack Mallers is doing in a way, or is that not quite the same?
I've only ever used Jack to go fiat into Lightning. I've never done the opposite way. Okay. I imagine it works fine there, but I just haven't done it.
Right.
But like, you know, the folks at River Financial, who we talked about today, you know, they're like a Bitcoin first kind of bank. And so they have Lightning deposits enabled. So you can go, you know, deposit straight to River's node and they'll, you know, you can swap, sell your Bitcoin, your Lightning Bitcoin for dollars directly there.
Have them do the swap.
Have them do the swap.
Or exactly. However they manage it, no one needs to know, yeah, right?
It's now because like you're sending it into their custody. So, right. You know, it's theirs, but they will kind of credit you with it. Mm-hmm. In general, kind of like the fiat to Lightning bridges are, they've been slow to pop up, I think, but yeah, kind of like the more customer demand that there is for it, the more.
But it's specifically in our case, it's Lightning to fiat because everyone's, you know, just wound up with Lightning because they've set up a node and they're receiving and now it's getting out. And, and I think this is the education issue between on-chain and off-chain. And
it's tough. I mean, like ideally, companies would just handle that for you. But there is just like a lot of the fiat on ramps are also crypto exchanges.
And and they have all kinds of regulatory issues.
Not even regulatory. They have internal incentive issues where actually prefer you to swap your Bitcoin for another coin so that they can profit off the trade and then have you send out there than just handle the Bitcoin swap for you. So like, you know, there's a GitHub repo of all the exchanges that support Lightning right now. And, you know, like there's a bunch in like Argentina. There's a bunch in, there's a couple in Vietnam. There's some like in, you know, like sub-Saharan Africa. There's, you know, a handful in Eastern Europe. Like they're all over the place. It's just the US has been a little bit slower to adopt. So I think like your two best bets are either Strike from Jack Mahler's or River Financial for going directly from Lightning to US dollars. And both of, like, I use both of those products. They're both, you know, run by good, solid Bitcoiners. You can depend on them.
It's really interesting that, the Cash App and Coinbase and some of these other, you know, mainstream, fiat to Bitcoin conversion places have not put in a Lightning interface. I mean, it just doesn't see, it seems fairly low risk to me. I'm not sure why that hasn't happened.
Isn't that a regulatory issue that they can't do that?
I mean, like it's, kind of. Mm-hmm. It really depends. Like the regulatory issue that you're talking about is real, where it's much worse in the EU. We've had actually a lot harder problems with the EU, where the EU regulators want to know like every amount that you get.
I'm Fifi Lagarde. We can't have Bitcoin as an off ramp out of our prison.
You need to know where it came from, and you also need to know where it's going. And so on Lightning, like if somebody's paying an invoice, like when I got paid by Eric Wall, actually, last night, like I got the invoice paid, but I had posted the invoice on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't like really know if Eric had paid it.
Right? So anyone could have paid
anybody could have paid it. Yeah. And so I didn't want to tell him like, hey, the invoice got paid in case, like
in case he wanted it. Right. Well, but if it's paid, then it's invalid. Yeah, you can't use it again. Right.
But so
he may be thinking, you're full of crap because you said you got it, and he knows that the invoice failed. So you're just going to be at each other's throats for decades over this.
Yeah, you just paid from one of your nose to the other nose.
That's right. I don't know what you're talking about, Eric. Like, I got it. So yes, there is a regulatory burden, but like there are tons of companies who've gotten over it, right? Because like, you know, if you're doing a withdrawal and you're sending the Bitcoin out, right, like you have custody of it, you can cancel a payment, you can have like a blacklist of nodes or something like that and say this is not okay. If you're receiving Bitcoin, that is like a little bit trickier, but generally like there's already,
you know, rules. Jack Mahler's got over it and he's like 20 years old.
I know, right? Like that's the thing, is there,
well, didn't he get Visa in to help financially and also with some regulatory stuff? Isn't that,
well, I think it's like the what he's actually doing is he's like live trading the difference. Like it's you give him dollars, but you don't actually own Bitcoin, right? He's live trading the difference and is sending Bitcoin for you.
I guess the one that bothers me the most is Cash App. I mean, like Jack Dorsey, you would think that he would have that thing figured out by now. That's the one that boggles my mind, is why does that thing, that Cash App is like a 10-headed hydra of ways to move money around.
Well, because why isn't Lightning, I would guess, and Ryan would know better and doesn't have to say anything if he's uncomfortable. I would guess they know that this is the AOL problem. America Online had everything tight, was beautiful, it was safe. You've got mail. Everything was fantastic. And then they said, people said, well, we want the internet. We hear something's going on out there. I said, no, it's too dangerous for you, too dangerous. You've got mail. And then they finally opened up a little portal and said, okay, you go through here. This is very dangerous. There could be weird shit out there at your own risk. Mm-hmm. 6 months later, they were a dial-up company. And I think that's what Jack sees.
I don't disagree with you. I will also say I think he's keenly aware that that's a possibility. But I think you'll notice, like, the latest move that they made, right, was Elizabeth has said this for a while, is they chose to scale via Layer SQL, where they made internal Cash App transactions free, right? Which means they just said, like, in their internal SQL database, like, one Bitcoin used to belong to Adam and now it belongs to Ryan, right?
So they're just changing the ledger, basically.
Which is, like, you know, significantly, like, safer.
Antithetical to Bitcoin.
But antithetical, yeah. Right? And yeah. And so, like, they could have made each of those a Lightning chain transaction. Yeah. But, like, you know, I think there are still legitimate, you know, they have millions of users and millions of very non-technical users. Mm-hmm. They do not want, like, they've made it a very clear point of making all the Bitcoin stuff incredibly simple on Cash App. I think it's fair to say the Lightning is still a little too complicated for them. Mm-hmm. If they wanted to prioritize it and, like, really make it work and had, like, high demand from their customer base to integrate it, I think they could do it. However, still, it's just a fact that the dominant use for Bitcoin is buying and holding it, especially in the U.S., which I think is to Dave's point about it being property, right? Like,
I agree. Like, I look at my Cash App and I look at my Strike app, and I'm at Dave something and over on both. Mm-hmm. It just seems like everything is poised to be able to just make that thing just
100%
go right back. I mean, it looks like Mastodon is what it looks like. It looks like the Fediverse.
Right. We just need to learn money. How to federate into all of that. That's an interesting analogy.
Well, that's one of the things that, you know, I've been excited about for a while is, like, it's ridiculous that I can't send from Venmo to Cash App, right? That's, like, that's what Lightning enables.
Interestingly enough, I think both of them use Plaid as a back end, and you could actually do it on the back end.
Right, like, good if you wanted to. But that's one of the things where, like, you're absolutely right that there is, like, with traditional fintech and Lightning and Bitcoin in general, there is just this, there's this incumbency problem where, you know, we're seeing a lot more people pushing the ball forward and really innovating on Lightning actually internationally. Like the guys at Moon Wallet, in Argentina, like, they're fantastic. Their wallet is great. They have, like, a ton of users. They're using it all the time.
The Phoenix wallet is also very slick. And what I like about them is they've just figured out how they're going to make money. We're charging you this money here, this money there, this money there. Enjoy it. It's pretty good experience.
Yep. I mean, like, it's pretty good. And, you know, Jack
couldn't convince him to do podcasting, but, you know, that's because the French hate me.
They'll come around.
Okay. I hope so.
They'll come around. I think there's,
they can't let the Israelis show them up.
Right? I mean, that's seriously, another war in the desert, people. Come on, what's going on with you Frenchies?
Yeah, there's, I think it's, I don't know, I'm very optimistic. It's a matter of time, like, the path dependence that it takes to actually get there. You know, there will be, it's one of those things where, like, there will be kind of pain points here. Like I was saying earlier, that's, like, obvious to everyone where we need more fiat off ramps. All that is just an opportunity for an entrepreneur to step in, and get a bunch of business.
Without a doubt, this is such an exciting place for entrepreneurs because you can do it at home, your existing PC, you know, set up a node, wait 5 days for you to have the blockchain synchronized.
Not 5 days. Well, maybe if you're on a Raspberry Pi.
The fast SSD. Well, it came shipped with it. That's what I liked about that outfit is they sent it shipped.
Yeah.
Question. What do we do when Bitcoin sucks the entire global financial system into the black hole that Bitcoin is, and then the U.S. military shows up at Lightning Labs with their guns? At what point? I mean, do we circumvent that? Or?
No. I've got the answer to that.
Okay, thank you, Dave.
I've got the answer to that. You're talking to the guy who works for a company called Lightning Labs. And the CEO is named Elizabeth Stark.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. The superheroes. That's right. Why are we even worried at all?
I don't think they have to worry about the military. I think they got everything covered.
Dave.
I was wondering where Ryan had parked his suit that he flew in.
I'm going to have to come to Alabama right now and silence you, Dave.
Flash
you know
him.
Too
you gotta
much.
Flash him. You got to flash him with the memory
right.
stick.
That's right. Yeah. You know too much.
That's answered. What else, man? What are you doing? Is Bitcoin Miami the big thing, or what's going on? Where are we focusing our energy? Is just build the way we have, which is fine by me, by the way.
So I think a lot of the cognitive dissonance I think that a lot of people have with Bitcoin and Lightning, like you hear this all the time, is like nobody's going to spend their Bitcoin, right? And I think what I particularly like about what you guys are doing more than anything else is that you're focusing on the other side of the equation, focusing on the people who want to earn Bitcoin, right?
And the people who really want to send it to those people.
Exactly. So but that's the thing, is that
it's another two-sided equation.
It is a two-sided equation, but like the gravity of the people who are saying, pay me in Bitcoin, like if they're creating valuable content, their users will figure out a way
to I just want to say something. I'm going to disagree with you.
Okay.
The gravity of what we're doing is being pushed by listeners.
Really?
Fuck yeah. That's how podcast marketing works. Of course we have, you know, 10 guys or gals who go, oh, yeah, I totally want this. Mm-hmm. But what happens is, and because I've been doing this from, you know, the beginning, mm-hmm. and people will come to me and say, well, they're listening. I've been listening to this show. They always say, you should listen to this guy. He had something interesting. There's mm-hmm. this cool technology podcasters are using. They are the true push mm-hmm. or the gravity, as you say, of podcasting, mm-hmm. because this is not a listener relationship. It is tribes is so appropriate because that's what we have. We've gone into media tribes. You see mm-hmm. it on mainstream. Mm-hmm. You have the MSNBC tribe and you have little tribes amongst that. And here we have, and I really noticed this with Joe Rogan back, you know, a year ago in March, we had the Joe Rogan tribe who were exposed to me there. And then they came over to the No Agenda tribe. Mm-hmm. They're members of both. Mm-hmm. You know, and then they spread all these things, and then Tom Woods came into this tribe. So that's all as you would say, user. Mm-hmm. I just prefer to say producer because that's what they turn out to be mm-hmm. in this relationship. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm seeing, but not discounting what you're saying about mm-hmm. that pool being there. But it was Stefan Molyneux, who was, you know, a controversial mm-hmm. guy. Mm-hmm. His listeners kept telling him, you've got to get on this thing. You've got to get on this mm-hmm. thing. He sends me an email, says, mm-hmm. hey, it's Adam and Stefan. We've never spoken before, but what's this lightning thing? Mm-hmm. And so, and then before you know it, a listener of his in New Hampshire has helped set him up.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So
that's why it's exponential. Like Venmo. It's like, in that regard, it's like Venmo. Cause I had never, everybody like you, it's the people who want to pay you mm-hmm. that force you to adopt a certain technology because
everybody
said, you know, do you want, hey, do you take Venmo? Do you take Venmo? Do you take Venmo? It's like, oh,
that's how Patreon fine. Rolled out. People are going like, you got to get Patreon. Yeah. You got to get a mm-hmm. Patreon, get a Patreon, got Patreon, get a Patreon. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's eventually you just give in.
That's super interesting because like one thing I always have in the back of my mind is when is the time to go and do another Bitcoin, like merchant adoption push, like brick and mortar. Like there was this, you know, in 2013, there was this huge push amongst the Bitcoin community for circular economy, merchant adoption. Like we need to get, you know, Academy and Dick's Sporting Goods accepting Bitcoin. And like, that's when like, it'll be the time. Right. But like, of course, on-chain Bitcoin isn't a payment protocol. Like it wasn't really designed for that. It wasn't really built for it. So that's like one thing I kind of always have in the back of my mind is like, is now the time to go and get a bunch of people and get the community to go out, like your bars, your restaurants, your sporting goods stores, you know, wherever you spend money, and to say, why aren't you accepting Lightning? I want to pay you in Bitcoin. I want to pay you in Bitcoin. I want to pay you in Lightning.
But see, I think, Ryan, I think that's happening right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, what you see with podcasting mm-hmm. is that happening?
Yeah.
Because what you're going to end up with is at some point, like, you know, I'll use my Zap wallet and where I can just check what's coming into my node. I mean, at some point I've got a bunch of Lightning sitting there. And whenever I want to refill my wallet on Sphinx or Breeze, you know, I'll just shoot some Lightning stuff over there. Mm-hmm. And at some point I'm going to have, you know, a decent chunk of money sitting there and I'm going to want to start paying my brother-in-law who does my taxes. I'm going to want to start paying him and I'm going to say, mm-hmm. hey, do you have Strike?
Yep.
And then it's like, it's going to, I don't think it'll ever there's no push into merchant services necessarily that's going to make that traction happen. It's going to be person to person money transfers, just like Venmo, where your, you know, where your sister-in-law says, "Hey, do you have Venmo?" And maybe she says, "Hey, do you have Strike?" Or, "Hey, do you have, you know, can you take Lightning payment? And here's an invoice." I mean, like, I think that the podcasting stuff is the beginning of something that creates that and self-perpetuates.
I agree with you on that. Yep.
Proposal.
Shoot.
For Austin.
Mm-hmm.
Soon to be the crypto capital of the universe.
Bitcoin capital of the universe. This is the Bitcoin industry, not the crypto industry.
Yes, and I'm with you. I'm a little taken aback because I'm big into alliteration, so I have to figure out the B.
Bitcoin bubble. No, no, that's bad connotation.
Not quite that one. Bonanza. Ooh. How about this?
Okay.
I will gladly get a few friends, and I will personally put 5% of my Lightning earnings into an Austin node for the homeless, which are people also known as experiencing homelessness, which is being completely mismanaged by city council and by Austin and by a bunch of dickheads. Mm-hmm. And so one thing, I have dealt a lot with the homeless in Austin, and you know that we have Community First Village, and we have a lot of different great programs that I think do work. Mm-hmm. What doesn't work is what you and I drove by on East Riverside just minutes ago. They all have smartphones.
Yep.
I'd like to reintroduce faucets. I'd like to have people be on a subscription so you can get a portion. Because we're just going to throw money at these people. But instead of saying, here's your free hotel room, you know, here's, yeah, and we can also route your disability. We'll help you with that. Get that into your Lightning wallet. You check into your homeless hotel, which is what we're doing in Austin. Mm-hmm. But you scan the QR code and you're back in society. With, and it can be small, you know, this is why it's so cool, because it can be variable small amounts. Mm-hmm. No one's really in the middle. No dickhead like Visa is making money off of the whole thing like they do with Snap.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think you'll see vendors who will feel more comfortable with people, because here's some proof that I have, and there's, you know, there's contracts we can make and there's payments that we can agree upon. And so maybe this person doesn't have the exact profile that I would want as a renter. Or a patron or someone buying something else. But then you can really start an economy where we're not just pissing money away.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, and by the way, this is a problem that would work for many places in the United States and around the world.
Places that are increasing.
Yeah. Is that something that I mean, it's a political thing, possibly. It's a lot of work, but I mean, I don't know.
That's very interesting, because I mean,
I'm just the idea guy, man. I don't implement this shit. I got Dave, when can we build this?
I've got to go back to work.
But do you think something like that would help?
I think so, because I think, like, you know, that's one thing that.
By the way, any podcaster or content creator, but in our world, podcaster, can say, you know what, that's really cool. I want to add a 5% value block to the Los Angeles node ID, or the, you know.
I think that's a really interesting idea. Because one thing.
Louisville, that, you know, one whatever. Thing
that Paul from Sphinx.
The whole Stackworks thing is fantastic. I'm a big fan of that.
He's chastised me a couple times about focusing on kind of like the exchanges and the big kind of like supply side, you know, the big market remittances, all that sort of stuff. And he's like, dude, no, like. The people that are going to adopt this technology first are going to be people that absolutely need it.
Poor people.
But, you know, podcasters can't receive money.
Poor people. Podcasters are poor people.
They can't receive money from their audience right now, right? Yeah. And his stack workers, they, like, can't get paid for their work right now, and they're desperate for other things. And here's another group of people that's desperate for some connection to some financial system.
We're trying to connect that. We've already talked about this. We want to, Dave, we were talking about incentivizing stack workers to find duplicate feeds in the index.
Yes, that's a real problem that can be solved. That I'm willing to put money to.
Yeah. Oh yeah. We'll put money into that for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
That's there's this whole push now in, you know, Congress with AOC and all this stuff about. Putting, letting people have checking accounts at the post office. And
that's the digital dollar. That's the devil coming down, baby.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, there's this whole thing for the unbanked. Mm-hmm. That's like this big term that's going around now.
Yep.
I mean, we all know that Bitcoin allows you to be your own bank. I mean, just make people their own bank.
Yeah,
absolutely. No, 100%. Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think it's, Now might be the time.
Well, you know, if Lightning Labs has any lobbyist or something or whatever you guys do over there to make, because you got to do more than just make great code. You know, you got something else going on there for you. But you know, we have Mackenzie Kelly here in Austin, who's now city council. Mm-hmm. I don't know much about her except she listens to my show, so pre-approved.
Yeah, good enough.
Good enough to work with. And yet she wants to fix the homeless that were the quote unquote camping ban. Mm-hmm. You know, she wants to find a better solution because that's clearly not working for anybody.
Get the Unchained capital guys in and set up a node and manage it.
To me, even just if we park money with Unchained and then you can use that to leverage and give people some liquidity, it's all about the liquidity. And thank you for bringing up the unbanked because, yes, the government, scariest words, we're from the government here to help, are coming, you know.
Yeah.
They're coming and it's going to be that level of control where the freedom is here. And there's a ton of merchants and vendors in Austin who are very freedom oriented that way.
They keenly understand the problem. They know these people. These people are not monsters, right? They're people who are temporarily experiencing homelessness.
Some not even temporarily. Mm-hmm. For some it's a lifestyle. Also cool, mm-hmm. but we got to figure out a better way so it works with everybody. And if that means that we need to get what I learned from Community First Village, which is just a phenomenal. This is what for people who know, it's the tiny homes, mm-hmm. and the people there do pay rent, but they help you. And it's $75 a month, $100 a month. It's $250 for a cabin. You get shared kitchen. But you know what? There's not there. There's no fighting. There's problems, but they solve it as a community, mm-hmm. not by calling in the cops.
Yeah.
Which is, by the way, one of the things I love most about Bitcoin is it removes something we've become very comfortable with in our lives in the United States is we always have a middleman.
Yeah.
We don't go over to the neighbor anymore and say, hey, man, turn it down. No, we call the cops. Yep. We call, you know, whoever it is. I don't like what you said to my kid at school. I'm suing the school. Yep. I'll get it. You know, mm-hmm. that's mm-hmm. that is so un-American
in its
Americanism, actually, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. that, you know, by removing the middleman in all these different things and making it a community effort, which is what people who are homeless have lost their community. Yep. That's the number one reason people become homeless is because they have dramatic family loss. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it doesn't take long, you know, four weeks, 2 months, you're out on the street, you know, you're living in your car and then it's downhill from there. Uh-huh. So it's just a matter of getting a community back. I have so many, I will say 15 different producers of the show who are experiencing homelessness at various times, but they have all caught on to the Satoshis because they're very literate. They understand phones and all that stuff, and they're like, hey, wait a minute, there's something here.
Yeah. So one unique life experience I have is, bought this house just, you know, not too far away from you, and directly across the street, it's like the view out of my kitchen window right over my sink when I'm doing dishes. Not like a homeless person tent, but it is, like a halfway house for veterans in particular.
Ah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, right next to the fire station.
Of course.
So I talk to these guys, you know, like every weekend, right? These are normal, smart, intelligent, educated people, right? That just somehow gotten screwed, right? One way or another, there's a million different stories. Somehow they've gotten screwed and they're just like, I don't know, like, you know, they're all trying to pick themselves back up, you know, they all have kind of the effort. And so I'm like intimately familiar with these people and they just like, all they need is just kind of just a little help. Right.
But help with responsibility. If you can give them true freedom, Austin City and the state of Texas is not designed by any means to give people freedom, more freedom than most, but the financial freedom. And I know it sounds really abstract and I'm getting real preachy, but I really believe that it makes a difference. Yeah. Just like they need community, they need freedom to understand that I'm not tethered to that.
Yep.
And that I can do things myself and I don't have to go to the post office and stand in line.
Because that drives those people. That drives them crazy.
Of course.
I've heard that story a million times. Even the regs, like, you know, I'm sure the people that run the actual house itself are good people, but even the regs there, these guys are like, I'm not a 4-year-old.
Right.
Right? Like, I can handle myself. They wouldn't even let him have a barbecue the other day for whatever holiday.
Stay at my place, stake some stats. You know, stake some sats for in case you go nuts, and I'll give that back to you. You know, mm-hmm. we can do that with a contract, whatever. You know, like a Sphinx tribe, don't spam my house, bro.
Yeah. There you go. Bitcoin fixes homelessness.
That would be beautiful. That would be beautiful. And you give, you know, for your merchant services, you get, you know, partner with somebody like River, I guess, is it River that you're talking about? either River or
Unchained has been looking for a reason to get into the Lightning space for a while.
Yeah. And you say, if you're going to be a merchant that participates in this system, we'll help you set up with a node, and we'll do your financial services for you. And
I'm sorry you can't see his face, Dave, because we triggered something in Ryan. He's off in like a whole different dimension. I can see it. He's like, or maybe it's just like, I want another beer. I don't know. Which one is it?
Column A.
We got to wrap this up. So this has been a very different episode from what we've ever done, but I really appreciate it because you gave us some insight into, you know, a lot of stuff that we don't understand, and just the general vision. And you represent, you know, you represent an entire movement, which is really nice. And it's great to have you almost next door, man. We should hang out more often.
We really should. It's an absolute pleasure to be on here, guys. I really appreciate it, Dave. You know, we missed you in the studio today for sure.
Oh yeah, y'all are drinking beer and all this kind of stuff. I'm just sitting here in my half-ass studio with my laptop on my cardboard box.
But hold on a second, you do have that brand new spanking DBX compressor limiter noise gate.
Oh yeah, I got blinky lights. Yeah, okay. I got lights blinking. Right. I feel like a pro.
We will thank some of our value for value. Do you have anything for today, or is that come about a sequence? You want to do that on the next show?
I had a couple, but I think I'm just going to save them up for the next one. Yeah.
Of course, you can support us by going to podcastindex.org, scroll the way to the bottom. And we have the big red donate button because, you know, yellow's for pussies. It's red. Red makes it happen.
Yellows and DSers.
DSers are totally for pussies. So we'll be back next week with another board meeting, Podcasting 2.0. Dave, thank you very much, man.
Yeah, man. That is great. Great talking to you, Ryan.
Great talking to you as well. Okay, thanks, Ryan, for all the great work y'all are doing.
Likewise. And that's it. We'll be back next week with another edition of Podcasting 2.0, bringing you into the board meeting for podcastindex.org. See you then. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcastindex.org for more information.
Go podcasting!